Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Well, if there's anybody listening, good afternoon. This is Thoughts of a Brother. I need you to bear with us for a second. Having a few technical difficulties. I would like to thank everyone that is listening in. We'll be right with you.
Good evening. We're having a few technical difficulties right now. We're trying to get it all together, but I'm going to go ahead and improvise a little bit. First, I want to introduce myself. I'm Derek Randall. Me and three of my friends, we've came up with the idea to do a radio show. We decided we would do something that we do normally when we sit around together. Talk about the things that matter to us and the things that we think are important in life in general as young black men growing up, young men, period, growing up and going through the struggles of life. The show purpose and the name of the show, Thoughts of a Brother, comes from the fact that we are all brothers of this society we're in. We are each other's individual. As one, we all are brothers for the other brother. So it's not just based on one, like a relative brother or brothers of a family. We're saying brothers of a society as a whole. With that being said, that was the reason for Thoughts of a Brother. The purpose of the show is just to get out there the effect we want people to understand that everybody has their own points of view, own ideas, own way of seeing things, and that's okay. We've all open to everybody's points of view, everybody's ways of seeing things, and we just want everybody to understand that it's okay to disagree, but at the same time, let's take something from that. With that being said, I've already introduced myself. So next, I want to introduce my one of my close friends. We grew up together in Robonia, Florida. We've been friends for over 20-some years now, far back as I can remember, probably longer than that, but I ain't going to give out my age. Go ahead, my co-host to my right.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm co-host tonight, Billy Boston, a.k.a. Bone, also known as BJ, also from Roboni, Florida. And Dad hit it on the head is pretty much as far as our purpose, so I'm not going to really expand on that too much. I don't want to spoil what he's already laid out for everyone. So on that note, I'm going to pass the intro to the person to my right. Homeboy.
Good afternoon. I guess I will be co-host number three, person to the right. This is Corey. Being that they both of them went through intros, we're going to jump right to it. If you want to go with your first time.
That's not a problem. I think this topic has been beat down like a lot over the last week. So I know everyone's seen the NFC Championship game against Seattle and San Francisco, and Richard Sherman, the cornerback for Seattle. He after the game had a pretty talked about interview with Aaron Andrews from if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Fox News. I'm not sure on that, but don't quote me. But after that, I felt some kind of way, and I didn't kind of take too kindly to how he portrayed himself in the interview. So I went on Facebook and I expressed myself, and I got a lot of feedback from it. And I'll give you a little background on my expressions and what I posted on Facebook. To quote myself, I said, "I am bemused. How can we celebrate and express gratitude toward the dream Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. envisioned, yet condone Richard Sherman's behavior on yesterday after winning the NFC Championship? Please allow me to pose two questions. Would Dr. King see the reason for Sherman's behavior? Is it cool or is it unacceptable? I guess it depends on the interpretation of I have a dream. One life begins to end the day we become silent about the things that matter, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr." Now, after posting this, I got a lot of feedback. Good discussion. I think it was warranted because everybody sees things differently. And like I said in the intro, the whole point of the show is to show that we all see things differently, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we can come to an understanding and having disagreements. So I went for myself, after making this post and getting a lot of feedback, I went for myself and decided to do a little research myself on Richard Sherman. I found out that Richard Sherman is 25 years old. He's born and raised in the infamous Compton, California. He graduated salutatorian, ranked number 2 in his class from high school. I did a little research on salutatorian. It means it's the person that uses under the valedictorian for the class, and he usually opened up the intro for the valedictorian to give the speech for the class. He attended Stanford University, where he excelled in athletics as well as academics. He's a member of the Phi Beta Sigma fraternity. In 2010, Sherman graduated from Stanford University with a degree in communications and returned his final year of eligibility in order to begin a master's degree. In 2011, Sherman was elected as the 154th pick in the 5th round by the Seattle Seahawks in the NFL draft. Now, me personally, I think that's quite impressive. So now, my only misunderstanding with it is, how can a person with so many accomplishments display the behavior that I've seen in the interview? So I still was kind of up in the air about it. So I decided to do a little more research. And in that research I came up with, this was a statement that I made inside my comment previously posted on Facebook that I read earlier. I said, "Whatever point of belief I have, I'm willing to stand by, but I'm not opposed to others' input. This is where conflict becomes fundamental, because without it, there's no revelation." Now, pay attention to that last sentence, because it's very important in this whole journey I'm taking you through on my research and to understand how I came to the realization of where I may have been wrong and where Richard Sherman may have been wrong and where we both may have been right. With that being said, Now I want to compare one of Richard Sherman's statements after the initial interview with Aaron Andrews. He said, and I quote, "When I say I'm the best cornerback in NFL, it's without caveat. There isn't a great defensive backfield in the NFL that doesn't have a great front seven." Now, Richard Sherman wrote this on Monday Morning Quarterback from Sports Illustrated, which is a column he writes for. So this also shows his capabilities as far as being educated. But it also shows something that I may have missed in the interview, because it shows the fact that even he understands that to be great is not just great by yourself. You have to have help. Now, I have a comparison comment. And my comparison comment to that, when I stated whatever point of belief I make, open to others' input. I think me and Richard Sherman kind of saying the same thing here. So I went a little farther. And then I found another response by Richard Sherman, which was later on. Actually, I made a statement first. I'm jumping the gun a little bit. I'm trying to get there. So be patient with me. I made a statement. My statement was, I've learned something today. And this was after my previous post about being bemused by Richard Sherman's inappropriate behavior. I've learned something today, and I appreciate it. I have to be mindful not to interject others in my thoughts in a negative manner. I should have not mentioned Richard Sherman's name in my previous post. In doing so, I implored myself to the same standard I was questioning. I apologize. Right is right. Wrong is wrong. Yet, appropriate behavior, myself not to be included. Then I looked, and I decided to look the next day after I posted that to see where Richard Sherman was on his whole identity and his understanding of what the decisions he had made in the interview. And I found this quote by Richard Sherman. He says, and I quote, I don't mean to attack him. And that was immature, and I probably shouldn't have done that. I regret doing that. Now, Richard Sherman said this on Unguarded, which is a show shown on CNN with Rachel Nichols. So, in my understanding of all this, and to bring this all to like a total end, and to understand the journey that I went through in this whole post and what I learned in the revelation, was that even Richard Sherman seen, after going back and looking at it for himself, that his behavior was inappropriate. Now, was I wrong for pointing out? Yes, I was wrong because I used Richard Sherman's name. But was I wrong for pointing out inappropriate behavior? No, I don't think so. And I think if it was me and I was on TV, or if I wasn't on TV, if nobody was watching and I did something inappropriate, I would want someone to point it out to me. The wrong part in what I did was mention his name, because at that point I singled him out. I didn't need to use Richard Sherman's name at all. I could have just said inappropriate behavior and went on with my quote, and it would have been just as impactful. Maybe it might not have gotten as many feedback or as much feedback, but at the end of the day, it would have been the same thing. So I guess to sum it all up, what I learned in this whole scenario was that at the end of the day, to be productive in anything we do, we have to be mindful of our behavior at all times. Now, I don't know how my co-hosts feel or how they see my standpoint from coming from that point of view, but I would like some input if I can get some.
Richard Sherman, and I guess I'm probably making the same mistake you made as I'm mentioning his name, but I don't see how we can talk about this without talking about Richard Sherman. Okay. Richard Sherman, to me, a product of the seeing where he's come from. It's hard to say that he's a product of his environment, but I consider him to be a product of his environment, the NFL being that environment. Okay, what makes Richard Sherman any different from Deion Sanders? Deion Sanders was outspoken. You know, he had no fault in speaking his mind. He had no fault in saying he was the best, and we gave him that. We granted him that to speak out like that without beating him down, because he wasn't as harsh or brash as Sermon, is what I'm thinking. You know, so I don't really necessarily have a problem with Sermon voicing his his opinion. You know, because that's all it is his opinion. I don't really have a problem with him going to that. I guess, if anything, my problem was the way he went about it. Yeah, he could have been a little more humble. Could have been a tad bit more humble, you know, in his approach. Especially now, because you just told me some things I didn't know about him. I didn't know he wrote an article. I didn't know that. You know what I'm saying? I knew he was educated. You know, I knew that much about him. I knew he went to Stanford. I knew all of that. But seeing that he has some, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm sorry, America. But, he understands that he shouldn't be talking like that on TV. He understood that. He knows. If he has that's what I was looking for, any kind of journalism type experience, he knew there was a better way for that. But the man was caught up in emotion. He made a huge play, and he was still caught up in that emotion. I knew he was wrong when he ran up on the man and patted him on his butt. I'm like, come on, it's too soon. It's too soon. I just lost. Don't come up running up on me trying to talk to me about anything. It's too soon for that. You know, talk to me tomorrow. I just lost the NFC Championship game. You can talk to me tomorrow. You can say whatever you want to say. We can talk about the play. You can tell me you the best, all that. I can deal with that better tomorrow. It was his timing that I felt like was way, way off. Way off. So that, for me, that's what it was. I had no problem with that gentleman. He can say what he want to say. And we can listen to him, you know, just like America has a choice to listen to us or they can turn us off right now. He has the same ability. You know, we have the same ability when it comes to the shirt. You know, either listen to him or change the tack. So I have no problem with the gentleman. Not none whatsoever. Corey, you have any thoughts?
Sorry about that. These difficulties, technical difficulties, but I would just piggyback off of you. Like, I don't have a problem with what I saw. Again, this is a young man who was caught up in emotion. Biggest stage, he's going to the biggest game of his life, and he's been listening to what you just told me. He's been overcoming obstacles for a long time. My question would be to you, Derek, what exactly was your issue? Is it what he said or the way he said it or the stage that he said it on?
You know, that's a good question. Because at first, I think what throwed me off was the way he did it. It wasn't what he said, because I've seen Michael Jordan. I've seen Muhammad Ali. I've seen a lot of great athletes talk brash. But in the manner they did it, it wasn't so much imposing. He was imposing, and I almost came off as good. Friday, I was honestly scared for Aaron Andrews. You know, it just seemed like to me, as if he was being a bully. And I know he was caught up in emotion. I understand compassion. I understand passion. I understand all that. But in that moment, what I seen from Richard Sherman wasn't called for. He had just won the game. He knocked the ball down to win the game for his team to go to the Super Bowl. Why was the need for you to come over and say anything but I'll see you next in 2 weeks in the Super Bowl? You educated. You graduated salutatorian from your high school class. You excelled at Stanford in athletics and on the football field. There was no need for you to do anything but come over there and show me that person. The person I seen was not the person I just read to you by credentials on. In that moment, he changed my outlook of him. Now, I had to go do research to find out who he was. I shouldn't have had to do that. He should have presented himself in that manner. That was my issue.
Wait, but is that, you know, this is how we talk. We're just allowing people to listen. Is that more your issue or Richard Sherman's issue? Because you just said, you showed me who you were in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So because of what I said and the way I said it and the stage I said it on, You forgot about everything else that I've accomplished prior to. I think it's unfair to Sherman. I think we shouldn't be so quick to. I guess what I'm trying to say is allow him that moment. Again, it's the biggest stage, it's the biggest game he's probably ever played in. He's now headed to the biggest game of his career. Allow him that moment. I've always been intelligent. I've always had to compose myself. I've always had to put a filter on what I say, be mindful of how I act. Okay, in this moment, I lost it. Give me that. I just made the biggest play of the game.
Can I just interject on that? I've never seen Rich Sherman quiet or humble, or I've never seen that from him. So I ain't giving him that. He gives me that every time I see him. Every time I see him, I see that same person I saw in that interview at the end of that game.
Okay, so if that be true, what's the big uprising about? If you expected that from him.
I was surprised. I didn't expect anything different. I just think he was kind of outside of the realm of what was appropriate for the situation. I was like, they smacked me. They already know what they did. Why are they talking to me?
I don't know. I think it's all been blown out of proportion. I think it... In magnifying what he said, we lost sight of the game that the man had. You know what I mean? Like, he made the biggest play of the game. I keep going back to that. Without that play, Richard Sherman is irrelevant right now because they're not going to the Super Bowl, and nothing else matters.
You make a great, great point.
I think that's where my issue comes in. Because if he wouldn't have had that inappropriate behavior, we would be talking about him knocking the ball down. What really matters? Because he did the inappropriate behavior, and we seen that, and it overshadowed what he really accomplished. I had to go back and find his accomplishment. So in the end of the day, Richard Sherman got his own way, which one needed. And I think that was my problem. As a former athlete, and I never played on that big of a stage, but as another man, I don't want to see nobody see and be their own crutch and pull itself out. So for me, it bothered me. Because I think he had enough on the field to speak for himself. He didn't have to go and make a fool. Well, I can't say he made a fool of himself, because that's my opinion. But he didn't have to go out and display the behavior he did in the manner he did. That was my issue. And like you said, you posed the question, was it him or is it me? At the end of the day, I guess it's really Richard Sherman because it's him. It's his situation. He's the person that's being talked about. But as a brother, to quote the name of the show, I don't want to see no other brother in society, hurting
himself, and it's not needed. Well, I guess, if you feel like his comments or his actions hurt himself, then I guess that would be, I could understand that. I'm going back to, it's a Sunday afternoon, and we're discussing Richard Sherman and what he said after the game a week out. So, I'm saying, obviously, it was big enough, and it's not just us. It's been all over national media. I read a post, a column, actually, and the title was Why America is Not Ready for Richard Sherman. And it was an interesting post. But at the end of the day, I go back to the same thing. Me personally, I have no problem with what he said. I had no problem with the way he said it. I have no problem with the stage that he said it on, because he's earned the right. We look at everybody else who has earned the right to say what they want to say, how they want to say it, when they want to say it, where they want to say it. And we walk by like it's nothing.
what it all boils down to me is the media will allow you to make a fool of yourself if that's what you want to do. If you want to make a fool of yourself on national TV, and I'm going to say he made a fool of himself. I'm going to say it. And I can care less if anybody agrees with me or not. I'm going to say he made a fool of himself. And the media is not going to stop you from making a fool of yourself, because what happens? People are looking up. They're looking up columns. They're looking up columns. They're looking up anything they can find about this man to learn more about him. You know, is he always like this? Because this is the first time anybody's seen him. And I think that's probably where you're going with that. You know, the people that may not be familiar with Sermon, this was their first time seeing him and seeing his reaction. And they're going off of that, because everybody's not going to go and do no research and see where it came from and what's his educational level. They're not going to do that.
All right, well, I see we have our first call on this subject. If you would, go ahead and state your name and your question, your comment, and we'll address it.
What's going on, brothers? My name is Mark Freeman, calls from Richmond, Virginia. VA stand up, two up, two down. on this comment, right, on this topic right here, fellas, I just want to, you know, chime in with it and say, you know what I'm saying, Richard Sherman, if y'all watched the Mic'd Up session on NFL Network, he went up to Crabtree and was like, man, good game, hell of a game, you know what I'm saying? He was trying to congratulate the man on playing a great ball game. In my opinion, if Crabtree would have just shook the man's hand, you know what I'm saying, granted he was heated, I heard one of the other commentators say that, you know what I'm saying, it wasn't the appropriate time, he should have talked to him the next day or whatever, but granted he was heated, but at the same time, this was a moment of opportunity as a man, to as a brother to another brother. He was just saying, man, good game. Granted, we have our off-field discrepancies and issues with each other, but brother to brother, I'm trying to put that aside and say, man, good game. The man disrespected him by shoving him in the face. He stuck his hand out to this man and been like, man, good game. You know what I'm saying? Dap it up. Man, I ain't expecting nothing else from you. You know, granted, it was a couple more seconds left on the clock when they had to kneel the ball down, but the man stuck his hand out because you don't know. Sometimes you see at the end of the game and people – when the game is over, instead of going to shake hands with the other team, they go straight to the locker room. So as his opportunity, as this man is going back to his side of the field, he stuck his hand out to say congratulations, good game. The man disrespected him, so he, you know what I'm saying, he felt disrespected, so that's where the choke sign came from, in my opinion. That's just, you know what I'm saying, he was hyped, he was in the moment, he stopped, he, like Corey just said, he stopped the biggest play of the game, and had he not, you know what I'm saying, had the opportunity to do so, the man would have just been like another, it just been another play. You know what I'm saying? Look at last year when Crabtree dropped the ball in the Ravens game, you know what I'm saying? And he didn't want to get nobody no dap at that game. So are we talking about Crabtree being the issue? How we are overlooking the fact that Crabtree last year when they played Baltimore did the same thing. The game was on the line, they threw the ball to this man, and he couldn't get it done, and he didn't want to speak to nobody. But now, because Richard Sherman do it and make his gesture towards the whole team instead of just making it towards one man, you know what I'm saying, now we're going to point the finger at Richard Sherman. Is that fair?
Well, you know what, Mark, we appreciate you calling in. Really appreciate the support and the love. But to comment on your statement, I totally agree with you. I mean, at the end of the day, no one can be identified from inappropriate behavior. If it was Crabtree last year, if it was Sherman this year, at the end of the day, I'm against inappropriate behavior. That's my point. That's why I'm standing. That's why I'm leaving it. Like you said, he made a gesture to go up to him to shake his hand. He didn't. Leave that alone, then. The man didn't want to shake his hand. You didn't have to go and have inappropriate behavior because he was inappropriate. I've always been taught one right don't deserve another. And that's my point of view. I totally understand what you're saying, but my issue comes to the inappropriate behavior, not so much to Richard Sherman or Crabtree. I don't know if my other co-host want to chime in.
I hear your point, Mark. And I would. You can't, don't. I'm gonna make sure I say this the right way and the appropriate way. I have to kind of check my how I talk on the radio. I'm trying to be more professional. Okay. You know, but they both was wrong. They both was wrong. Why even, I mean, the it just happened. You just knocked the ball down. Okay, there's time for shaking my hand and telling me a good game. That and when is that? When the game, the time clock hits zero, all the players emerge on the field. Good game, bro. You wish you best of luck. You know, I'm going to get y'all next year. It's time for that all after the game. And if Crabtree was wanting that, he would have came out on the field or he would have left the field. You know, I just didn't think right after the play happened. Come on, man. Come on. I don't – what I mean, he was wrong for missing in his face. But what player is going to want that right after the play? That's my whole point.
Or?
Well, my last the last comment I'm going to have on this is, and I guess I'll pose another question to think about for a later discussion. Who are we to say or to determine right or wrong behavior? I'm going to stand by what I originally said. I have no problem with Sherman, his comments, his actions, his anything. A question for thought, were we more drawn in because of Sherman's reaction or because of Aaron Andrews' reactions? Nobody mentioned her. I think if this same interview had been conducted on SportsCenter with Stuart Scott or Ray Lewis or Chris Carter or Keyshawn, I don't think we would have the same, we would pay this the same attention because we would, quote unquote, understand it more. Is the fact that Aaron Andrews was involved in the interview and her reaction and the way that she reacted to what he was doing and saying, is that what drew our attention to Sherman a little bit more? Either way, I think we spent enough time on this. We want to move on to topic two. Homeboy, if you want to go ahead and pose your question.
Okay, I almost feel as if my topic almost goes hand in hand with this. And I ask, you know, my topic is, you know, what happened to the black man? All right. And I want to put the emphasis on the word black simply because, not because this is a color-related show, no means, and not insinuating that at all. But when I say black man, I'm wanting to speak from the perspective of a black man because that's my color. So that's the only perspective I can speak from is from a black man. And I ask that question simply because, you know, a part of society, I'm looking at society, and, you know, we were brought up to feel as if, you know, the responsibility of a man is to care for his family, provide for his family, you know, make sure it's his children, his wife, let me take that back. Because you don't necessarily have to be married or anything of that nature to be considered a man. A man handles his responsibilities. A man takes responsibility for his actions is my definition of a man. And I feel like as a society, a little bit we've kind of lost that along the way. You know, where did we lose it? How did we lose it? Why did we lose it? Is it simply because we're dealing with our surroundings and we're having to evolve? Or is it simply because we lost our way? Anybody, y'all got feelings on that?
Yeah, I'll chime in on that. I often think of that myself because I'm not always
what I am today.
So I'm not one to look at individuals, I should say, men, because we're talking about men in specific, and see them in a manner that they can't fall to get back up, because I think everybody needs to fall to understand what it is to become a man. I think that's all a part of growing up, and I think it's good for us all. But I think somewhere along the way, that foundation, that, like, I know I can speak for us three, we was all raised a certain way. And in that certain way, it was a foundation that was there that was already established, that you came out of, that you knew. When you went outside of that house that you were raised in, you had to conduct yourself in a certain manner. Because if you did, you had to answer who's in the house. And that's the last thing we want to do. You know what I'm saying? And I think to get back to the ground roots of that, you have to go back to that foundation. And I think that's where the black man went. I think that's where every man went. I think that's where every daughter went. I think that's where every individual person went. When you lose that foundation, you have nothing to build on. You can't build a house without a cement block laid full. You have to have a foundation. And that's with anything. I mean, you could go even to a car. You have to have a foundation to start. I mean, that's just my insight. That's how I see it. I don't know, Corey, you might have a different look. Or you might have the same look.
Well, I mean, being that we were raised pretty much the same, my opinion would be the same. I think it all starts at home. And being that we're discussing this right now, we have to look at ourselves and ask, what level of responsibility am I willing to take? Or what level of accountability do I have to correct what I see wrong? You know what I mean? If we're sitting here, we're sitting here saying that we see something wrong with what we see when we look at black men, are we asking ourselves, am I portraying what I want to be seen when somebody else looks at a black man? Did that question make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I think society as a whole has more of an impact on the upbringing of our kids than we in the home do. And that's our fault. You know what I mean? We turn on TV, we turn on radio, we turn on, they go to internet, they go to school, they go everywhere else and they learn what's cool to be, but there's no communication at home. We don't teach our kids that it's okay to be different. We don't teach our kids that they're individuals. We've even gotten away from, and I'm not saying, you know, to each his own, whether you want to, however you raise your child is on you. Some people believe in spanking, some don't. I'm one, I do. I'll put it out, whatever. But I think to say or to ask the question, what happened to the black man, we will first have to go back and look at the family as a whole. That's just where I would start.
Okay.
I don't know if your question is being asked more specifically
asked. Then let me change my question then. So then if the root cause of it, the root cause of what I feel as, you know, the black man has lost his way, if the root cause is the family, their upbringing, then what has happened to families? What has happened to that basis that they may or may have not received at home? Maybe, you know, okay, we all pretty much came from the same upbringing, but yet my household was different from your household. Your household was different from Corey's household. But at the same time, we still end up with the same basis. You know, you treat people like you want to be treated. You treat people with respect, you'll get treated with respect. Respect is not given, it's earned. Stuff like that, you know.
Right.
My father never had that conversation with me, but I learned from his example. My father received respect from other people. So, you know, I picked that up from him. So, I mean, it's dope.
Well, I think that may be the answer to the question.
Yeah.
If we know that all three of us came in a similar surrounding, we all had, one thing we had in common is we had men to look at as an example. My answer to the question that you posed would simply be we have too many women who are forced to play a dual role. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a bad thing that women should, I'm not going that way, so please don't take it to the left, but there are certain things, like you just said, your father didn't have to verbally say those things to you, but you had the advantage of seeing him. You had the advantage of an example. Even if I don't verbalize it to you, I'll show it to you. How many households do we have right now where that's not available? You know what I mean, how many boys do we have coming up that don't have a man, if not their father, a man, period, to look at, to emulate? Maybe that's the answer to our question. Again, I don't know. I'm just giving my opinion.
Which is a great opinion. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it all comes back to one thing, and it's the foundation. And we all went back there in some way or manner or form. We went back to the foundation. And like Bone said, BJ said, it's pretty simple. I mean, I don't remember having a lot of in-depth conversations with my dad, but I watched my dad. And at the end of the day, the things we pick up are the things that we really don't realize we're picking up because of the examples that are being set in front of us. Just being a man was being that. Today, at 35 years old, to me, to be a man is to be like my dad was. Now, granted, I may have had an advantage because my daddy was a great example, in my opinion. And some people might not, some individuals might not have it. But for me, I had that. So I'm grateful and I'm thankful for it. But it's still, at the end of the day, for me, it goes back to the foundation. And I think that, to answer your question for me, Bone, at the end of the day, if the foundation is there, the black man is still be there. So now we have a responsibility, which is a lot of reason for the show, as black men, to bring the black man back. And that's really the principle and the point of us doing it. I mean, I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, I do. And I'm sorry again, we have another call. I guess we'll take this call and see who this is. All right, you're on the air. Go ahead and state your name and your question, comment, concern.
This is 202 Donigan. I had to get back on this.
Look, listen. This is what we're going to do for you, man. We're going to grab a seat. We're going to put you a seat here with us, and you can sit here with us every Sunday. How about that?
No, I'm with that. I'm with that all day on that, though. I had to come up on this one. On this particular subject, man, I kind of feel like it's two issues. It's complacency and it's a lack of presence, you know what I'm saying? Because in regards to being complacent, we have too many fathers out here who want to be the father but not want to be a dad. So, and we see a lot of our brothers and sisters going to college, but when you look at who's walking across the stage, you see a whole lot more women walking across that college graduation stage than you do see men. So we have these brothers now who are working blue-collar jobs and are not taking care of their kids, not being an active role model in their kids' lives, because my father's one of them. My father was one of the fathers who weren't here when I was growing up, so I had to learn from my mother, and I had to learn from my older brothers, my cousins, my coaches in the football field, you know what I'm saying, other people in my community, my pastor, my deacons, you know what I'm saying. I had to learn from them, you know what I'm saying, what it took to be a great father. So, you know what I'm saying, those type of things come from, like Corey was saying, the foundation of the family. If you don't have that family giving you life, you will lose that. And when we think about being complacent, going back to what I said about walking across that stage, as a man, if I have a woman taking care of me, making more money than me, I'm making five figures, she's making six figures, you know what I'm saying, she's paying all the bills in the house, we lose, sometimes we can find ourselves losing the ability to feel like we are that man in the head of our household. You know what I'm saying? That's a hard place to be in, a hard place to find ourselves. So when we get down, that image that we are giving off to our children is not only just affecting our men, it's also affecting our daughters, because now our daughters are looking at, you know what I'm saying, is this the life that I'm supposed to be living? Is this the type of man that I'm supposed to be attracted to? Is this the type of example that my father is setting for me? So that goes ties into what I was saying about the lack of the presence. If I can just be a dude, you know what I'm saying, with notches on my belt saying, yeah, I knocked off this one, and this one, you know what I'm saying, and I got kids with two out of the three that I knocked off, and I ain't being a father to my kids, now I got a woman, you know what I'm saying, trying to raise a man to be a son. I mean, to be raise a son to be a man, you know what I'm saying. It's kind of hard. I'm not saying the women can't do it, but it is a hard example to ask, a hard request to ask. There's a lot of things that women can't teach a man how to become or how to do, and yet we are leaving that in the presence of the woman. You know what I'm saying? It's unfair.
I understand what you're saying, and I want to speak on one point you said. You mentioned that, okay, you didn't have a father in the household, but you had a brother to look at. You had an uncle to look at, cousins, you know, other men in the community. That, to me, was even more pressure on the black man, okay? Not only do I have to be an example in my household, I need to be an example in the community as well. You know, that's a lot of pressure. A lot of people going to run from that pressure. You know what I'm saying? They're going to run and try to get away from that situation. But if you're a part of society, there is no running from that. It's going to be seen. So you made a good point. I just wanted to speak on that.
Let me ask you this. Let me piggyback on what you just said. A couple of years ago, well, not a couple of years. It's been a long time now. But Barkley, one time, somebody said something about Barkley about being, well, why was he, did he consider himself a role model? He said, no, athletes should not be considered a role model. Your mom, your dad, you know, people in your community, people in your everyday life should be your role models. Athletes should not be required to be a role model. With that being said, if you have a child that has no father figure in his life or no person he can turn to be like that, should an athlete or should somebody in the limelight be someone that a child should be able to look up to?
Well, I'm going to answer that, DJ. I don't mean to interject myself into this, but inappropriately, but I have to answer that. At the end of the day, for me, we all hold accountability for our own individual responsibility. And me as a man, I believe at all times somebody's watching. So I'm accountable for how I behave and what I do. So if the question is, Barkley a role model? No, he's not a role model, but he is accountable for his behavior. Because he knows better than I do somebody watching him. So with that being said, no, he's not a role. No, he shouldn't be revered as a role model if he doesn't live up to it, but he should be accountable for his behavior.
I will say this if I can. I don't know, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You said Barkley is accountable. I would disagree with you because he's telling you that I don't want that accountability. I play basketball. This is what I do. I'm not here to raise your child. I'm not here to set a good example. I'm not here to be in the limelight. I play basketball. Unfortunately, because he plays basketball on the biggest stage in the world, he has no choice but to be in the limelight. Does that mean he automatically has to accept the accountability of his position? No. So what that tells me, or what it should tell us as halfway intelligent people, that's not somebody that I want my child to emulate. The question now becomes, how do I do that? I can't be mad at Barkley because of how he feels about his position. I can't be mad at him for that. All I can do now is go back to where I should have been in the first place, my focus on my child. If I know that my child is watching Charles Barkley or Lil Wayne or whoever, and I know that they don't hold the accountability that they should for the position that they hold, then now I need to kind of monitor my child's response to the person that they're watching. I'm going to go back a minute. This show is about being real. What this question has posed to me, personally, I have these same households that we're talking about. I can't say I have them, but I've set them up. I'll put it that way. I have kids that I'm not in the house with. I mean, we all know that. Let's be real. So now I started one of my responses with accountability. This topic alone has raised my awareness to my level of accountability. How accountable have I been for my kids? You know what I mean? Okay, I may see them, I may go get them, I may do this, I may do that, and I may think that that's enough. But if we're sitting here and we're saying that the reason we feel that there are a lack of black men who know how to carry themselves, who know how to, who have a decent, what's the word I'm looking for, personality, and that's molded in the house, do we have to live in the house to be or to take on the role that we've assumed? that, like, nobody forced that on me. That's a position that I put myself in. So now should I be fighting that much harder to make sure my kids are not one of these black men that we're talking about right now? I think that's where the problem comes. You don't have to necessarily be in the house to do what you need. You don't have to be in the house to be a father, is what I'm saying.
But let me ask you this, and I'm going to piggyback off of what you just said, being in the house to be a father. With that being said, if you are, as a child, if you are living separate from your father and you go to, spend some time with your father and your father is saying A, B, and C are steps that you need to take to be a father, to be a man, and then you come back home and your mom is putting down your son, I mean, you're putting down your father, your mom is bad-mouthing your father, is always doing everything to make you seem like, you know, you need to do the opposite of what your father is doing. Now you have a conflict of interest. Now you have confusing principles being given to this child because this child is saying, my dad said do A, B, and C. My mom is saying doing X, Y, Z. So which way am I supposed to go without having, you know, two people who are standing as one to say that we are one unit, we are one person, we are one family, without having that uniform front, you know what I'm saying, that united front, how is a child supposed to be able to differentiate between the code that my mama gave me versus the code that my daddy gave me? Because I'm trying to find my way, trying to find out which path is the right path. Granted, my dad's not here, but my mama telling me don't listen to nothing my daddy say. So,
okay,
don't you
let me interject for a second before you get too deep off in that and I lose my train of thought. And I'm sorry if I'm taking over, but he asked a question that I want to answer. It's unfortunate that we have those situations where mom and dad can't get along for the sake of the kid, but this is life. This is what happens. Now, in that situation, or let me give you a question in response to your question. Can I tell you anything about the character of your father? That's a question
no.
to you, Mark.
No.
Why
you
not?
Can't.
Why not?
Because my father is who he is and what he's placed in his life, you know what I'm saying, what he's placed in my life, who he is in my life, whether he's right or wrong, he's already set the example for me. Now, you can correct my path. You can say, you know, Mark, as a man, you're not doing the things that you need to do to be a father to your child. But to say that, you know, to say that my foundation was at fault, you know what I'm saying, We're kind of in a small degree, we're taking the blame off of myself for where I'm falling short and placing it elsewhere.
So you asked the question. You said, what does a child, if a child is put in a position where a father is trying to teach him one thing, but father doesn't live in the house and he goes back with mother and she's speaking against father, what position does that put child in? Is that the question that you were asking?
Right, but...
Okay,
Slow down.
Stop right there and think about the question I just asked you. If your father has shown you who he is, can anybody come in and tell you anything different about your father? Regardless to who my father is to you, that's not who he is to me. So if my father has been a father to me, there is nobody that can come in and tell me anything other than what he's shown me, mother included. You get where I'm going?
Okay, I got you now. I'm with you now.
Yeah. This is where responsibility comes after accountability or before, or however. They go hand in hand. If I realize that I have a responsibility to this child, the man in me, and it's easy to say this, but it's real hard to do it, the man in me, should always look at that responsibility as priority number one. Regardless of what I got to face to uphold my responsibility, that's my responsibility.
So are you in a small degree saying that the child, because he's speaking manhood and his father's teaching him what manhood is, are you saying that the child should be able to differentiate for himself?
Absolutely. If his father is being a father, yeah.
I mean, but then again, you know, at what age, really, is a child going to be able to
differentiate between.
Exactly.
Okay,
that's my point.
You know
right
what?
Here.
So
point.
I mean, you put the responsibility on the child, but we have to remember that this is a child we're talking about. You know, and this is a child who's been forced, not by his choice at all, that has been forced to deal with adult situations.
Thank you.
No, this is a child that has been forced into a situation where they have to deal with mama saying one thing and daddy saying the other. Who is right? Who's wrong? How am I supposed to know the difference between the
well,
two?
Well, I think that question brought another avenue that we're staring down. The question that you posed is what happened to the black man or the state of the black man. Now, you say at what age? That was your response. I saw you yesterday. Now, again, this is the type of show we have. This is what we do, so we be real with each other. So here we go. I saw you yesterday, and your son let somebody take his bike. He's not. He's a little boy. Somebody took his bike, and you told him what?
I want to make sure I say this in the exact words. I want to make sure I said the exact words that I had with my seven-year-old. I want to make sure he's 7 years old. He's outside playing with his buddies. You know, I'm in the house. He comes into the house, daddy, this boy got my bike. I kept telling him to stop, but he took off with my bike. You know, he's 7 years old. Granted, he's seven. But, you know, I had to take the opportunity to teach him a life lesson. Okay.
At seven. About being a man.
About being a man.
That's called being a father. So age is, the point I'm trying to make is age is not relevant when there's a father. And there are things that you are going to learn when I feel they are appropriate for them to, for you to learn them. Because like you said, this is a life lesson. We have a lot of boys who are not getting those life lessons and have to find out through trial and error. Unfortunately, some errors you can't come back from. You know what I mean? And that's the position that we put our kids and our future black men in by not being what you were yesterday, which is a father.
Yeah, he better have come home with that bike. I don't know.
He's stuck on the bike.
All I know is, yo, he comes to me, daddy, my bike. Yeah, okay, your bike. You made the choice to let that boy ride your bike. I told you several times not to let anybody else ride your bike. But you made that choice to go outside of what I had already told you. So now you're dealing with the consequence of doing it outside of what I had already told you not to do. So now you deal with those consequences. You go find him, you get your bike, and then you come home. So while it might not really seem like a lesson to him, I just wouldn't come save him. I wouldn't come to his rescue. No. As a man, you go handle your business, and you get your butt back home.
A seven-year-old man.
Seven-year-old. I mean, yeah, he's seven. But at the same time.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, you said at what age.
But he has the advantage of being in the household with me.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? And back to Mark's point, I mean, how, and almost back to my point, you know, I feel as if, as black men, as responsible black men, it's our responsibility to portray. If we're not verbal, and although I'm on the radio, I'm not really a verbal person. You know what I mean? So
that's what Buddy told you.
That's what Buddy told me. Buddy told me I was. But outside of what Buddy may think,
gotcha.
You know what I mean? I speak when I feel it's necessary. So I felt like I could easily went and found the boy with the bike and got the bike and brought it home and yay, daddy saved the day. But I mean, what was that going to solve? What would he have learned from that? I would have been a crutch for him, you know, and I might have been the turning point for the rest of his life. You know, if I have an issue, I can go run into somebody else to solve my problem. No, solve your own problem.
So let me ask a question now in regards to going back to the 7-year-old son, as well as going back to my point of should the father be, you know what I'm saying, should the mother and father have a united front? So let's just take the same 7-year-old child, and let's just say, for the sake of the story here, let's just say I'm messing with Corey's baby mama. Now, me giving an example of what a man should be, and Corey giving an example of what a man should be, and now you have And his mother gives an example, quote, of a man should be. Now, do you see now that the mother's not going to be single forever? She eventually will fall back in love with somebody else. She will eventually now be dealing with, you know, somebody else in the household who is not the child's biological father. Is that, are you now still saying that who my dad is, or who my dad has shown himself to be, should not be overridden by who now this man is in my household assuming my father-like responsibilities? Should I not give this man any respect? Should I not give this man any consideration for the example he's trying to show me of being a man? Is that wrong for me to look to him and say, you know what, he's also trying to teach me how to be a man? Should I ignore his?
We should be conscious of that. Is my whole point. We should be conscious of the fact that our youth today need that example. It really doesn't matter where that example comes from. My 7-year-old son, I call him my son because he is my son, but, you know, I'm not his biological father, but he's my son. And I'm a do my part as his father to guide him. And that's what parents do. Parenting, we guide. You know, we don't make a person. What we do is we try to give them the examples and teach them the lessons along their path in life that hopefully will guide them to be that responsible person, to be somebody that's humble, to be somebody that's, you know, caring and to their children, you know, and know, okay, we need you in the household. So, you know, I'm feeling you.
Well, I want to comment simply because he used my name. And if you were a man who had dealings with one of the mothers of my kids, however that went, however your question went, and you were taking on the responsibility or assuming the responsibilities of man in that house, great. That's fine. I'm sure there are some things that my son may take from you, whether I have them or not. There are some things that he may take from you that he feels he can apply in his life. The fact of the matter is, as long as I am being a father and I am assuming my responsibilities in my child's life, there is no other man, regardless of who they may get with, whether they show them right or wrong, that's going to overshadow or overpower my influence as their father. That's just going to happen. The only reason that happens is if me as the father is not there with that child. Now, I think we spend a lot of time on this subject, and we can go back to it at any given point in time, but we got a couple other topics that we want to touch on. And this one kind of segues into the next topic, which was the state of the union. And by union, I mean family. We touched on this a lot in topic two, but specifically, what has happened to the family? And I don't want to say black family. I don't want to say Hispanic family, white family, the family in general. What we saw, or what the idea or the definition that we gave of family, is something totally different than what I see today. So I pose that question to you, fellas. What's your opinion? Okay. I guess nobody got one.
When we speak on the state of the union, I don't know.
We can't hear you. I don't think we can hear you, homeboy.
Hold on, let me try that. When we speak on, I'm sorry about that. When we speak on the state of the union, I remember when you first pointed out this topic to me, I really thought at the beginning, I said he's going to talk about the president making a speech on Tuesday.
I think we lost you again. I don't know if I need that. I don't know if we can hear you. I can't hear you.
You can hear me, phone? Okay. All right. Well, all right. Please bear with us, because as you know, this is our first show, so we're having some technical difficulties every now and then, but we're gonna bear through it. We're going to move on. Like I was saying, the State of the Union, I was under the assumption it was going to be about the president making a speech on Tuesday, but now I understand where you're going with it. I think it's a good question to pose. I mean, that union is very important. And it's that we do it.
Or how we do it. I'm sorry, I had hit the wrong thing. BJ had to screen it up for me. And how we do it. The union is the foundation. It almost goes back to what we started out talking about. It goes back to the question BJ posed. At the end of the day, if that foundation is there, the state of the union, the state of the foundation, the state of anything we doing, is going to come out. And it's going to be all right. Just like BJ was saying, this is how I do things in my house. In that moment, he decides to teach his son a lesson. In that lesson, his son, like BJ said, probably didn't know he was learning something. But he'll never forget that. He'll know from now on. Either one or two things going to happen. He's not going to let him hold his bicycle. Or when he do get his bicycle, he's going to know, I ain't going to daddy. I got to handle this for myself. That's a man. That if we get that engulfed into the men, because we can't start with the children, because like BJ said, how can you hold a child responsible for certain things? If we get that engulfed in the men to imply that into the kids, the state of the union, we don't need no speech. It's going to speak for itself. You don't need nobody getting up Tuesday to tell me nothing about the state, because the state already showing itself in front of you. I'm a firm believer in action speaks louder than words. I believe, I remember my daddy telling me this, you can do something bad, and people will go out and buy the newspaper just to tell somebody else or to go show it. They will call everybody in the neighborhood to know you're doing something bad. When you're doing something good, it seems like nobody ain't talking about it. And it's true. It's the truth of the matter. But I've learned over time, and life taught me this. When I ain't being talked about is when I'm good. Because believe it or not, they talking, they just ain't talking out loud. And that's the good thing of it. And that's why I say, like, the State of the Union, yes, I'm all in for it. I'm with it. But that foundation has to be there.
When you bring up the word foundation, what are you referring to? What are you talking about?
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I'm just saying foundation as if everybody knows what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is when you, that foundation is being raised in an environment where morals, ethical principles are laid and understood. Not so much to the fact that where I tell you what to do, but you watch what I do. And it's the example that I'm telling you to do. When that happens, at the end of the day, you emulate. You don't even know you emulate. But you are, and I've heard it all my life, and I know it's to be true, a product of your environment. You know what I'm saying? Like we pointed out earlier, we're always raised in the same manner, but in different households. But the environment we was raised in was Robonia. So at the end of the day, we're a product of Robonia, and it shows. We don't even have to tell nobody we're from Robonia. People know that's that boy that's from Robonia. That's my Iron Boy. You know what I'm saying? They're going to say that's my Iron Boy. That's Mary Ann's son. He a boy. They're going to say, oh, yeah, Mr. Boston, that's Mr. Boston's nephew. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I know him. His daddy, Billy, down there in Robonia. Yeah, Big Billy. Yeah, I know. You're a product of where you come from, even if it's good or bad. And that's what I'm saying. The State of the Union, to get to be a good speech, and we're gonna keep, I'm going to keep using that analogy because you're going to go back to it anyway. To be a good speech, you have to lay the foundation for the State of the Union to be the state. Because it shouldn't be a state. I mean, at the end of the day, if you really think about it, it should be what it is. We should be able to look at it and see it for what it's worth and why we need to talk about it. I'm doing good, you doing good. Hey, let's do good together. That's what it's all about. But like you said earlier, when Buddy get involved, hey, it can go any kind of way. But that's Buddy's job, though. You know what I'm saying? That is Buddy's job. It is written that it is said he's to cause confusion and destruction. That's Buddy's job, confusion and destruction. Now, why would you want to be fooled over that? I do not know. But The greatest trick he ever pulled was to fool the world he didn't exist. So half of the people don't even know what they caught up in. Me too. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm excluded because brother get hold of me sometime too. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to be real with you. Buddy get hold of me sometime too, so I ain't holier than thou, but I understand that buddy exists. And that, and for me, I'm winning. I'm winning more than I'm losing now, because there was a time I didn't understand buddy exists. Buddy had me to the point where buddy was, I was buddy. Imagine that. Now, pun on that for a minute. Well, here you, Bong.
You speak on the state of the union. The question that instantly pops in my mind is, okay, what is the state of the union? What situation are we in right now? I mean, if I was speaking from a child standpoint, you know, I wouldn't see that there is a problem. You know, but as an adult, you're looking at the world today, you know, shootings in schools and parents killing their own children and just the nonsense that I feel as if goes on today that did not go on when we were children. Maybe I was just a child and naive and I didn't see it. Or is it that it just wasn't as spoken on as, or it wasn't as publicized as it is in the news nowadays? You know, that I personally feel the state of the union is screwed up right now. We are in some hard times. People can't find jobs, you know, but you fix households. How am I supposed to take care of my children? So now the system, the state, I almost want to say, is forcing me to stick my hand out towards them for assistance and help when I should really be looking towards myself or upward even for the answers, though. How can I improve my state? Before I can worry about the state of the union, I need to be most concerned about the state of my being. Who am I? Where am I trying to go? What do I want for myself? What do I want for my family? You know, so ask the question or the statement, the state of the union just imposes more questions to me. Now I got to look inward. Now, that's difficult for people, to look inward and check yourself and ask questions about yourself and put yourself, you know, towards the forefront. What am I doing? What am I doing to improve myself? What am I doing to improve my children's surroundings? What am I doing to help my community? Am I doing anything? Or am I doing anything to help it? Or am I doing things to hurt? So
Well, you just, the fact that you said that the question alone made you look at yourself. That was the reason for the question. I think if each one of us where to take accountability for, and it goes back to each and every topic that we've discussed up to this point. If we learn to take accountability for our own selves, each individual, wouldn't that affect the overall state of any union, of our union? That would affect the state of the world. The problem is we have people who don't take accountability for themselves. I am who I am, I do what I want, and you are nobody to tell me anything differently. Where does that mentality come from? I think you muted. I don't think we can hear you again. But.
No, it's buddy. You didn't hit me. Buddy, I want you to hit me. You hit me. That's buddy. That's buddy all over it now.
He ain't want you to call him out, huh?
Hey, buddy, all of these computers right now. He's with all these technical difficulties.
Yeah,
right. You know, I mean, he's going to know the nervousness. You know, the nervousness that we all have.
Yeah.
Prior to being on the air. I ain't going to say, this ain't come natural to us. This is outside of our box. We took a big leap to jump outside of our box and do some things that, you know, didn't just come natural to us. So, That's buddy. Buddy's all in that.
I think more so we should go into detail a little bit more. Because we've had these in-depth conversations about buddy, and we see how buddy how he impacts our world, whether it be my personal world or your personal world that has an impact on me or affects me indirectly, buddy is affecting me. And a lot of us, we deal with Buddy and don't even realize it. Now, I know some people might be asking the question, who was Buddy? Some of you probably figured it out by now. You said Buddy is the reason why we don't take accountability. Can you go a little bit deeper into that?
Well, my thing is to be accountable means you have to, like Bone pointed out, you have to question yourself. Most people don't want to do that. And going inside yourself means more likely you find out you can't do it no way. And once you find out that you can't do it, now comes that light bulb moment. That light bulb moment in your head. Well, you realize, okay, I can't do this. Mom can't help me. Ford can't help me. BJ can't help me. Wild can't help me. Auntie, Uncle can't help me. Who I'm going to? Going back to my foundation. I can remember as a little boy, I remember saying, I ain't going to worry with it. I'm going to let the Lord handle it. I didn't necessarily know what Grandma was referring to or going to with that, but I knew in that moment Grandma was all right. So I was all right. So as I got older and things came up for me, when I went inside myself and realized I couldn't go to Mama, I couldn't go to Grandma no more, I couldn't go to BJ, I couldn't go to Cora, I started to say, God, I'll handle that. Now, granted, I might didn't understand totally what I needed to do for God to handle it. But as time went on, all I had to do was ask. That's when I realized Buddy was the one who telling me, don't be accountable for yourself. So if it's God on one side and it's Buddy on the other side, I'll let you figure out who Buddy is. I guess I stomped him. Just I stomped him because ain't nobody say nothing. So I guess I can tell you
know, what I'm saying. I mean, at the end of the day, to break it down, though,
in a general form, Buddy is the devil. It's Satan. It's Lucifer. It's whatever you want to call him. And your way of calling him, we've decided to use Buddy as a way of expressing who it is when things seem to be going toward the negative, or we know we're being influenced in a manner that really ain't beneficial to ourselves. Me, I fight with Buddy every day. I mean, but the understanding in fighting with Buddy is understanding that Buddy exists. And like I said earlier, I feel like I'm winning because I know who I'm fighting against. It's a different story because there was a time where I didn't even know I was fighting. So I was really losing. How you going to win anything and you don't even know you in it? So now that I know better, I feel like it's my responsibility to put it out there. I said you got a caller, boys.
Yeah, I was going to say we got another caller. We still have our resident. We're going to call him our fourth member. He's still on the line. Hold tight, Mark. We're going to come back to you. We want to give an opportunity for our new caller to speak in on this topic. Go ahead, caller. State your name. Speak on your topic.
This is Q in Atlanta, but I'm going to wait because I got a lot of background noise.
Okay, we'll come back to you.
Okay, we're going to come back to that caller. We appreciate you calling. Once you get it together,
we'll be up.
Hey,
call us back. We're waiting on that call. Corey, you want to speak more on the State of the Union?
No, not necessarily the State of the Union. You kind of went in on Buddy and you posed a question for me. I'm listening to you and you say daily you realize that you're in a fight with Buddy. My question is, if Buddy has been defeating you all these years, why would you continue to fight Buddy?
You know what? I'm glad you caught me on that because I stated that wrong. And I'm glad you caught that on air so I can put that out there the right way. You're right. The realization is when I said I messed up. I know now for a fact. Whenever I say I'm finna mess up, It's totally messed up. I'm finna mess it up. Whatever it is, if it's good, it's messed up because I said I'm finna do it. When I realize, like I said earlier, that thing that Grandma said, I'm gonna let the Lord handle that, it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier because it ain't for me to do anyway. I can't be buddy. Buddy beat me for 16 years. And every now and then he beat me now. But when I realize I can't do it, and I allow God to do it, it's a lot easier, it's a lot peaceful. I mean, it's just a beautiful feeling. I mean, there's no other way to explain it than for you to experience it yourself.
So are you saying that half of the battle, or maybe the whole battle, maybe half the battle is realizing that buddy is there? The other half of the battle is realizing that ain't for me to fight. It's impossible for me to fight that because he is much slicker, much more intelligent. He knows a lot more than I do.
It's what he does. That's what he does. That's his job, is to just walk that's what he does. I really want to get to this caller. Because I'm interested in saying that if the gentleman took time to call us, I want to hear what he has
ahead,
to say.
Go ahead.
We're coming back to you. You're in a better position now. I believe we may have lost that caller. Call back. Mark, I'm going to come back to our fourth member today. I guess, folks. Go ahead, Mark. You got something on this topic? Guess we lost him as well.
I think we got our other caller back now.
Go ahead, caller, state your name. What's your topic?
Okay, we keep losing.
But I mean, at the end of the day, like y'all know, we can talk about Buddy and God all day. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we've accepted it. I'm not ashamed of it. I mean, like I told y'all, whatever we're doing and however we're doing, if God is, I'm in it. But if he ain't, I can't be a part of it. I just can't. I won't accept myself to go through what I went through for 16 years because I was blind to the fact. My eyes open now. I ain't shut my eyes no more. It has gotten better, and I know it's only going to get greater. Backtracking ain't for me. I don't know about, you know, anybody else, but I can speak for Derek. And I'm convicted in what I believe, and I'm convicted in what I'm saying to you. If there's nothing else you take from what I'm saying today, take it. I love God with all and everything in me. And since I've become to that understanding, life has been good for me. Now, I can't speak for nobody else, because like I said, I'm accountable for Derek. And being accountable for Derek means at the end of the day, Derek is good. And everything around me seems to be good because I'm good. And that goes back to what you were saying earlier, Paul. What happened to the black man? What happened to the man, period? Maybe God was taken out of this scenario. Maybe we let Buddy control what was going on, and now Buddy is leading, and that's why it's going afar. You know what I mean? I mean, at the end of the day, it is what it is. It's like what you said. Looking inside yourself may be the hardest thing to do, but for me, it was the best thing.
And on that note, I think we got our caller back. Let's see if we can get him on the line. All right, caller, go ahead. State your name. Yeah, we lost him again.
We're going to get that caller, though. Caller, don't give up. We ain't giving up on you. Keep trying to call in. We sitting here. We waiting. We'll move on. I mean, Corey, are you finished with that topic? If not, we can stay on it.
Derek, I just want to say that was very profound, man. You know what I'm saying? To say that finding God and knowing that you are right, you know what I'm saying, that's a real statement. You know what I'm saying? It may not be everything that you want it to be. Your life may not be where you want it to be today, but to know that you are right, that's even greater than knowing that I am where I need to be, because sometimes we might get complacent in that place that we found comfort in, and not realizing that God got a little more for us out there. If we just reach out and grab it a little more, and we just got a little more desire, a little more oomph in our step about what we want know what I'm saying? That walk would be a whole lot easier. But to know that you're on a journey, to know that you get comfort from being on a journey, that's powerful, man.
I appreciate that, Mark. I really do. I really appreciate that. But I have to give credit where credit is due, and it's all God. I mean, it really is. Anything I project, anything I say, I want it to come from that place. I don't want it to come from nowhere else because I've seen the damage the other way can go, and it just ain't worth it. I mean, why be on earth and be dead? You might as well live. I mean, I had fun them 16 years. Shoot, in them 16 years, you couldn't tell me I was doing. I was having me a ball. But in the last 40 years of my life, since I've changed and I've understood the different understanding of how I'm doing things, I've had the most fun in my life. I mean, from 31 to 35, I just started living. Whew. Think about it. But don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Hey, I'm enjoying this ride. Hey, I'm going to keep riding it, too. I'm going to keep riding it. I'm going to keep getting farther and farther in it than I can because at the end of the day, it will work best for me, and it works for me. It works. It works. It works, period. That's what I should say. It works, period.
Yeah. So, BJ, I'm going to throw a little hot analogy at you right quick. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know, we talked about Corey just said, you know, he asked Derek, you know what I'm saying, why do you keep fighting Buddy? So using that same thought, going back to what we talked about earlier about your son and the bike, if your son went to you to say, Dad, I need your help, he may not have been going to his spiritual father, but he still was going to his father. Do you still feel like what you said about you teaching him the right of the man so he can learn to stand on his own, do you still agree that was the right thing to do, going to say, I'm going to get my father to help me?
I do, because I responded to that situation, not through Buddy. Buddy's going to be like, go find him, get him close to his head, knock him off your bike. I don't drag him off your bike, but you better get that bike home. You know, I took the, I don't really feel as if I took the path in that. I feel as if I took the path as a man. You are responsible for, at times, handling your own situation as a man. And this kind of leads into our next topic, but I don't want to jump on it and take that from homeboy. But that was my impact on my child, teaching him the right way of being a man, following the proper path. You know, so yeah. I feel like I still have that the right way. And some people may disagree. You know, maybe some people feel like I still have and follow the fight. He come back home with a black eye. He didn't come back home with a busted lip. He got in the fight. You know, he wasn't really concerned about his safety. He was more concerned about the trouble he was going to get in if he came home without his bike. That's what he was most afraid of. So, hey, get your bike. Get it back in. Let me get so I
can. Okay.
Hope I answered your question, Mark.
He did. I just want to hear you say it. That's all.
Move on to our fourth topic, which is our impact as men. For me, I went and I thought about it, and I went back and found something I wrote about 4 years ago. And I stated I went from son to father, civilian to soldier, drunk to sober, unchanging to understand. I'm fully focused, man. Now, to break that down, as a son, it is my responsibility to conduct myself as a responsible reflection of the ethical and moral foundation my father and mother laid before me. I knew, I can take you back to Mr. People might not remember this, but some of y'all, I know y'all too do, remember Mr. C's in Parramatta. I went to Mr. C's and I seen me some bubble gum. Bubble gum, bubble what, bubblicious?
Well,
by the cast on the way out.
I picked it up,
walked on
my
school. We got into the parking lot of Mr. C's. She said, where you get that bubble gum from? I said, out the store. She woke me out in that parking lot at Mr. C's and walked me back in Mr. C's and made me turn that, get the bubble gum back to the cat, to the restaurant. to the store, I should say. Because at that point, you're making yourself vulnerable, but you also allowing yourself to be a vessel of what we all should push to want to one day be. You know what I'm saying? Christ-like. In no way, shape, or form am I saying I'm the next Savior coming, or I'm truly saved and so and filled with the Holy Spirit. No, I'm not saying that. I told you earlier, but it gets me too. But what I'm saying to you is, in everything I do, I'm trying to do better. I don't want to be perfect, but I do want to be better. I do, because I've realized and I know I'm not going to be perfect, but I can be better. So why not? So for me, as my impact as a man is understanding that unchanging is something I can't do. It's something I shouldn't even try to deal with, because why should I deal with unchanging when God already done set the plan for me? I can't change what God wants me to have. I can't change what God placed in front of me. What I can do is understand it, and that's understanding. That's a man. That's my point of view. I don't know how you boys feel on it.
I just want to ask you a question. Your impact as a man, you said, is understanding that you can't do anything past accepting the fact that you can do nothing but trust in God. That's how I did that. Okay. Now, we said earlier that once we grab that understanding, or even if we don't want to, we are watched. We are on stage when we leave our house. For someone who was raised to believe or who was taught that a man is somebody that goes by any means necessary, a man is, they do whatever they got to do to get what they want, to provide, to do this, to do that. God, nowhere in that. When that person watches you and they're faced with a situation that you might be faced with, but they have a totally different, their understanding is totally different. So they would have done something totally different, and they present the question to you, what made you do it this way, or why didn't you do it another way? What's your response? Do you just tell them to trust God? I mean, that answer probably wouldn't work for 80% of whoever asking you that question. How we're talking about your impact. Now that you feel, or now that you become a man and you understand what being a man is, how does that impact everybody else that you come in contact with?
I'm a firm believer that my actions speak louder than anything I tell you. I can tell you a lie, right? I can tell you right now I'm going to do something. But if I don't do something to everything and it's beneficial to you, the next time something needs to be done to you, you won't count. That's impact. That's me understanding that unchanging ain't for me to do.
I can't do it, but I'm doing what God is leading me.
Opportunity to go with something that is guaranteed to win, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I do that? I think we have somebody else trying to get through. I'm not really sure.
You got a caller?
Looks that way. Go ahead, caller. You on the line? Hello? Okay. I guess not. So we're going to go ahead and segue into our next topic, which is, I mean, we've kind of touched on all of this, and it's funny, we all came up with our own individual topics. We didn't really discuss one amongst each other what we were going to talk about, but it ended up that we all had interchangeable topics. The last topic we had was our parenting styles, knowing how I was parented, or knowing how I was raised, comparing that with the way that I now find myself parenting, do I find myself taking a lot of what was done to me or what was shown to me and the way that it was done and shown, do I find myself giving that to my kids? I guess that was the topic. Anybody got a comment or want to say anything on that?
Speaking on your topic, my parenting versus the way I was parented, I don't parent the way my mother and father parented me. I don't feel like I do anyway. My household, I would say, was ran by iron fists. You know what I'm saying? I told you not to do it. You did it anyway. You already know what's the next consequence. Ain't no conversation. And don't say a word. Just take these licks and learn from this lesson. The way I parent, I try anyway. Sometimes, depending on the situation, I may not get to the talking part. It may just be action. But I try to make my discipline, I will say, a learning experience. A lot of times I got discipline, I ain't learned nothing. I didn't know what I was supposed to learn from it. I didn't see it at the time. I just know I got punished. I got whoopings for stuff I didn't even do. I got whoopings for being in places I wasn't even at. But the way we were brought up at those times is, okay, such and such said they saw you at such and such, doing such and such. Take this whooping.
But, you know, Mama, I wasn't even there. I didn't even have that opportunity. So, I try to help my children have a voice of their own and be able to express themselves, because I felt as a child a lot of times I wasn't able to express myself. You know, I wore what my mother told me to wear. You know, I talked the way my mother told me to talk. You know, I try to at least verbalize what thoughts I may have for that situation. Look, okay, you didn't do that right. We've had this conversation before. I told you last time, if you didn't do it the way I told you to do it the next time, what the consequences are going to be. Do you understand that? Yes or no, it don't matter. Bam, get these laughs. All right, because I done told you. So you better get these laughs. But I'm going to try to give you this lesson before I give you these laughs. But you're going to get them. You know, and don't get me wrong, America, I am not abusive. I hardly ever whoop my children. But you can ask people, the majority will say that my kids are very well behaved. They're kids, 7, 3, and 1. They're kids. They're going to be kids. But for the most part, they're respectful. They don't talk back. You know, my daughter, I'm working on the talking back. You know, she's a girl. She gets a little leeway sometimes, but... And maybe that's wrong on me. We're giving her that leeway.
No, that's being a man with a daughter.
You know what I mean? So, I you know, that to me is the hardest part of being a father. I find it easier to be a father to my boys. It's difficult, and I almost have to be careful of be mindful of what I say, how I say, how I act in front of my daughter, because I don't want her to take the wrong thing from my actions and say that either that's okay or it's not okay for me to be treated that way by a man. That's not what I want. I don't want my daughter to be put in that situation where she got to deal with that. So, you know, while I want her to be not outspoken, but I want her to speak her mind and not just accept anything that anybody says to her, I don't want to be a fool. But at the same time, I feel like it has to be a limit to that. And that's what my wife, one time from my wife, Julia Boston, shout out, baby, I got you. All right, you know, that's where my wife comes in. I you know, while, yes, we're parenting together, I lean on her for support. I lean on her for answers when it comes to raising my daughter. And she does the same thing with me when it comes to raising my sons, you know, because she don't want to step on my toes. Like Mark said earlier, you know, the difficult part of living in and, you know, having kids in two different households is, okay, they're getting one thing from here, they're getting one thing from another place. That's where parenting comes in, when you have to be partners. You have to be on the same page in some aspects. Even in marriage, living in the same house, we're not going to agree about everything, you know, but we got to communicate between each other. Okay, baby, is this okay with you? Because I ain't feeling that. Baby, is that okay with you? Because, you know, I was feeling a certain way about it, but, you know, if you're okay with it, then I'm okay with letting them do that. So it's communication, mostly. First and foremost, is communication. Your parents is communicating with your child, and there's no right or wrong way, as far as I'm concerned, on how to raise a child. There's no right or wrong way. Outside of being just plain out abusive to your children, there's no right or wrong way to be a good parent. You just have to try. And I think that's where a lot of people drop the ball when it comes to being a parent. They don't even attempt. They don't even try. They run away from the situation, or they just blind eye to it. You know, I think on Terrell Owens, that man grew up in a household, and it was just his mother, across the street from his father's house. And his father was not in his life. How much running do you have to do to avoid being a father to your child when that child is right across the street from your house? That blows my mind. And then we look at Terrell Owens, and people judge him, and they talk about him, and they bash him in the media. This man did the best thing he could in his situation. Luckily, he had a good support system around him in his household, and I'm sure there were other men in the community that he probably looked up to. You know, but we can't judge this man off of, you know, his response to certain things when he had a difficult upbringing. You know, that's why I was so hard on Sherman. I don't really necessarily know his whether he came out of the household with his mother or his father, you know, but, I mean, from what I saw of him, he's had every opportunity to take a good situation and do something with it. But then to be somebody like it may have just seen him for the first time and just kind of blow it for him and for every other dread-wearing, I say dread-wearing because I'm wearing dreads, every dread-wearing black African-American male that is seen walking in public and that is judged instantly off of their image. You know what I'm saying? So, and that goes back to me as far as parenting. Don't judge me off my image. Know me. Speak to me. Talk to me. And let me show you how my parents raised me with respect. So that's how I feel about it.
I just want to pose the question again because you went back to Sherman. Why can't we give him the same respect? Yes, somebody may have saw him for the first time in that interview, and automatically, as we do, they formulated an opinion of his character based on his actions. But you don't know him. You don't know how he was raised. You don't know his struggle. You don't know his character. You know nothing about him. Other than black man with dreads who's acting real aggressive right now. That's all we saw. He didn't curse. He wasn't even disrespectful at all. He was just aggressive about what he was saying. Now, had he said it in a calm way, okay, yes, I'm the best corner in the league. Don't talk about me. When you put him up against me, this is what you get. Had he said it in that manner, would we have had such an opinion about it? Had he used the same words without the aggression, would it have been an issue?
Not for me. But that's why I said the behavior was inappropriate. I didn't say what he said I didn't like. I said his behavior was inappropriate. You have to reflect. At the end of the day, like I said, accountability. What he gave America is what America took from it. Ain't nobody make that up about him. That's what he showed us on national TV. Now, being that he regretted a couple of days later and said he regrets doing it, doesn't change what I've seen. So that's his accountability. That's why I say he has to be accountable for his own actions. I'm accountable for mine, and like I said, I make mistakes. And sometimes my behavior is inappropriate. In my post, I feel like my behavior is inappropriate. But as a man, and as understanding that I'm going to make mistakes, I'm okay with that. Because I learned something. That's the conflict and the revelation now for me.
Now, as a parent, trying to get us back on the topic itself,
uh-huh.
As a parent, you know, how do you take that opportunity to do you want your kids to see that and judge their own opinion? Or do you want to let them see that and be like, you know, now you didn't really handle that properly? You know,
as a parent, if I'm living up to my responsibility as a parent, I'm not so much concerned with what my kids see. You understand what I'm going? Like, I can't be with you 24 hours a day. I'm not always monitoring what you see, what you hear, who you're around. It's impossible. So, yeah, I would want to see it because I would want to see what their response to it would be. How do you feel about what you just saw? Now, by me asking the kid that question, that means I have to be ready to confront myself because if he gives me an answer I don't like, I can't be mad at him. That's the impression I gave him. If he thought that was okay or if he thought that he should have went in a little harder or he thought whatever he thought and I had an opposite opinion, I can't get mad at the kid for what they thought as a parent. But to answer your question, like, if you can't, it's impossible for you to monitor your kids 24 hours a day.
And that's where the job of a parent comes in right there. When you do have the time that you do or you are around them, that's when you instill your lessons in them so that they know whether or not that you feel as if that was right or wrong.
I wanted to ask this question like 10 minutes ago when you're talking about parents. Do you feel that you can be a parent and also have a respect
a friendship relationship with the kid? Do you feel your child should be able to talk to you about anything? Because I hear that a lot. I want my child to be able to come to me and talk to me about anything. Do you really want that?
You want that because you don't want them to go and get that advice or that answer from anybody else other than you, because you don't know what somebody else gonna say.
Uh-huh.
So yes, will it be uncomfortable? I'm sure it would be uncomfortable. Would I know exactly what to say? Probably not in all instances, but I don't want to make them think that they can't come to me.
Right.
That's why I don't want that. I want them to know that I'm there, I'm here for you, I'm listening to you, speak your mind, but just like I got to be prepared for what they say to me, they got to be prepared for my response.
I think at the end of the day, it finds its own place, the friendship and the parents. But the most important thing is I'm a parent first. And when I establish that, a friendship will be built out of that because it's out of love anyway. And if it's done from the right place and with the right things and the right feelings and all that involved, man, my mama's a great friend to this day.
Right, but there are still, because of the level of respect, and some of it is a level of respect, some of it is a level of fear, and it's a fearful respect. But because that respect level is there, I'm sure, and I know what I'm talking about because I've known you for a long time, and you've known me for a long time. We all known each other for a long time. There are some things that we've been faced with. There are some issues that have come up just growing up that we felt uncomfortable going to our parents with because, first of all, I don't, like you just said, I may be uncomfortable with your response. Number two, I don't really want you to know that I'm faced with this situation. I don't want you to know that this is something that I'm dealing with. Probably because I shouldn't be, but the fact of the matter is I am. And I'm looking for direction. And if I don't come to you, I'm going to go somewhere else where they probably ain't going to love me like you do, and their advice ain't going to be the same advice that I'm going to get from you, but I don't feel I can go to you.
But wait. But when you're saying that, you're saying you know. That at the end of the day, I probably should go to mama. Probably should go to daddy. So what tells you not to? Is it buddy?
Yeah, we already know that.
Is it buddy? I don't want to give buddy credit for that. I ain't giving buddy credit for that. You don't want to go to your parents and talk to them with your parents about that because you know you ain't got no business doing it in the first place.
That's where buddy comes
in. That's buddy.
That's where buddy is.
Is that buddy, though?
Yeah, that's
that buddy. You know you ain't got no business. That buddy is not God. God's sitting there telling you, you know good and well,
yeah,
you ain't got no business even being around this. But yet, still, you're putting yourself in that situation.
Here's where buddy comes in. The fact where you realize, when you come to that realization that this shouldn't even be a conversation. But yet, I'm still seeking answers. That means you listening to buddy a little bit more than you listening to that realization. If you would have accepted the fact that, you know what, I think you shouldn't be
doing. Right. And that's what I'm saying is that if I'm gonna give buddy credit for any of that, it's the simple fact that I'm still looking for answers to a question I already know the answer to. That's why I ain't going to my parents in the first place, because I already know the answer.
So at the end of the day, and based on what you're saying, we don't want to give buddy credit for nothing. Because he don't deserve it.
No, he don't.
He don't deserve it. It's the same way it works for the same person that I told y'all that undisputed has to be. So a lot of times what he's doing is taking you up for what God already planned for you.
But he don't know it.
But he don't know it. He's just doing his job.
Yeah, we back on buddy again, and we got off topic of the conversation, which was parenting. And y'all answered my question about being friends with your child.
It's thin line, man. Just like it's a thin line between love and hate, it's a thin line from being a parent and being a friend. And I personally feel when that line gets blurred, it allows the opportunity for problems. You know what I mean? It allows the opportunity for other people to, I don't even gonna even say other people. For me as an individual, if I was buddies or friends, I'm going to say, since buddy, we're already using buddy for something else. If I was friends with my mom, I would have a different level of
respect for my mother. And it may be some things that I know is not right, and I know that my mother would not agree with, but you know what? What's she going to do? She ain't going to do nothing. I'll tell her about it some other time.
Yeah, that's my father.
You know what I mean? That's my friend. I'll tell her about it afterwards. So I don't think that there's room in a healthy parent-child relationship that's for that line to get blurred. That's my opinion.
Okay. And just as a side note, from what you just said, all you said is you realize you are accrediting your mom with doing a good job.
Yes.
Period. We pretty much got close to the end of the show. It was our first show. It was a little rocky. But we did it. Again, this is what we do. This is what we will do. We open to comments, we open to questions. We'll work on getting better. I know dialogue wasn't flowing as some people might have wanted to, and whatever the case may be, at the end of the day, we're doing what we feel like. This is our way of giving back to whoever wants to receive, and we also want to receive what you have to get. That being said, anybody else want to say anything?
In closing, like Corey said, you know, our first show, I would like to thank our listeners. Let y'all know, throw a quick plug in, Thoughts of a Brother every Sunday at 4:30. Please call in with your thoughts and comments. You know, we touched on pretty much all the same. All our topics kind of tied in together. We do that. That's the way it kind of works out. That goes back to the whole thing of, you know, we had the same upbringing. So, like Corey said, you know, I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you got something from the conversation, even if it just made you be like, you know, that bone is a trip, man. You know, don't believe a word he say, you know. that dude there is a little different, you know. Yeah, you know, when they learn what to do and what not to do, they learn something, you know, about us as well as, you know, hopefully about themselves. So, you know, that's the whole point of the show, and we look forward to giving you more of that. That.
Yeah, I want to piggyback off my call. We appreciate your support.
I'm sorry, I think my mic went out. My mic what? Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Yeah. We just want to do it on a platform where others can hear it and get out. And we hope you enjoyed it. With that being said, lock your doors or open your hearts to the Lord. It's hard, but it's fair. One love, JWJ. Dad out.
There's a fine line, baby, I'm on it.
There's a fine line between love and hate. See, came way too late, but baby, I'm on it. There's a fine line between love and hate. You see, came way too late, but baby, I'm on it. them told me. I say I have a choice to be who you want to be. It's left up to me and my mama and them told me.
Focus. Then from the Glock rounds and lockdowns and burials, the seeds that sold get devoured by the same locusts. Cause it's a hard road to hoe if your ass don't move and the rain don't fall and the ground is dry, but the roots are strong, so some survive. To your surprise, now my voice they cries. You got more juice than Zeus, slinging lightning trying to frighten flames dwellers of the Serengeti, but get beheaded when you falsely dread it. Melanin, silicone, and collagen injected, dissecting my pride. Who the one gonna get it started? We be the lion-hearted without infanticide. It's like that red sprite you can't imagine, unless you're looking at the canvas of life, not through the peephole of mortality. Single-minded mentality, getting over on loopholes, getting paid twofold on technicalities. Clicking your heels, scared to voice how you feel.